No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zaka Jacob.
Hello and welcome to this Brass Tacks podcast. My name is Zaka Jacob. I anchor Brass Tacks weeknights at 9:25. And with me, Anusya Kumar, the producer of Brass Tacks. What do we have on the show today?
Zaka, the big story is actually coming out of Maharashtra. It's been 4 days since the BJP and the Shiv Sena won the election there. Yet we are nowhere closer to a government in that state.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's like, you know, they got a mandate. They went to the people. They fought the election together. Yes, there were sort of teething troubles in the alliance before they went in. But having done all of that, gone to the people, won the election, you'd imagine that, you know, they'd be thirsty to get back to power. They'd be desperate to get back to power. But it's going to be, like you said, 4 days, and we still don't know, you know, if this government is going to form, what the contours of it is going to be. I mean, initially, you would sort of want to believe this is just a lot of shadow boxing. This is just the Sena wanting to bargain for, you know, plump portfolios, maybe a position for Aditya Thackeray. Yeah. But I think the longer this stretches, one gets the impression that I think Uddhav Thackeray feels, or at least the Sena leadership feels, that if they don't push hard this time, the BJP can really basically pretty much eat up the Shiv Sena from a long-term point of view, because let's face it, at the end of the day, they are fighting for the same vote bank. You know, the Sena may have had a different history in Maharashtra, and the BJP, of course, is a national party catering to a vastly different audience and a different vote bank nationally. But ultimately, in Maharashtra, it's become so intertwined that they're basically fighting for the same vote bank. So at some level, I think Uddhav Thackeray feels that this is perhaps the only way he can sort of make a distinction about his own party, its relevance, its future, and what it stands for and who it appeals to. So that's why I think he's really made this into some kind of a prestige fight, if you will. I don't think this is just about, you know, finding a plum post for his son. If it was just that, I think they could have sorted this out a long time ago. I think he wants to convey to the BJP and to the rest of the world that he is still the principal person in this alliance.
Which is exactly why, just a few hours after the numbers were certainly clear, he came out and he had a press conference and he said, look, Amit Shah came to my house and we discussed a 50-50 power sharing deal. Now it's up to you guys to honor that.
Yeah. So he's made it about, you know, a person's word.
Yeah.
And I think when you frame it that way, it becomes very difficult for the other party to go back. But you know,
Fadnavis has actually today, because he said, hey, we never discussed anything like this.
But look at the hard numbers. And I think this is where Fadnavis and the BJP are coming into it. They're like, we have twice the number of seats than the Shiv Sena has. Yes, you know, they've put out this logic of the strike rate being better. Yeah. The BJP
their
strike rate.
Their dependence on the Shiv Sena 70, is a little more this time around. Yeah.
Strike rate of 70%, Shiv Sena strike rate of around 50%. But the fact is, they need each other. There's no way a government can be formed without these two parties. I mean, I know there's some amount of brinkmanship that both sides are saying. There are about 20-odd independents and about 28 independents who've been elected. Even if the BJP were to take the support of all 28, they still will be well short of the halfway mark. So either, you know, they call this off and say that, you know, we'll find some other ally, or they just have to find a way to work together again. I think eventually they will sort of come patch up and come back to the negotiating table. I would still like to believe that this is part of, you know, who blinks first sort of brinkmanship that's going on. But I think it'll get to a point where the central leadership will have to intervene. I think Amit Shah will have to make that phone call or go down to Mumbai, go up to Matushri and hammer this out. I don't think this, at least given the way it's been going, I don't think this can be solved at the level of Devendra Fadnavis and Uddhav Thackeray. I think this would at some point get to the need for central intervention.
No, because it's got to be frustrating for the voters also, because you've given these two parties
absolutely
a certain mandate. If they're squabbling at this point of time about forming the government, hey, how are the next 5 years going to go
exactly,
in that case?
Exactly. And I think this whole talk about, you know, Sena plus NCP plus Congress, I think that's just a pipe dream. I don't think that's happening. If it were to, I think it would be a complete travesty of the mandate that the people gave. It would be making a joke of the people. They went into this calling themselves the Mahayuti Alliance. So you can't, I mean, no matter what your differences are, and surely there are quite a few differences between the Sena and the BJP, I don't think the Sena can afford to just dump the BJP and form this alternative alliance. In any case, neither the NCP nor the Congress are particularly interested in doing that. At least certainly Sharad Pawar has made it clear he thinks this mandate is for the NCP and the Congress to sit in opposition, and I have no reason to believe he would you know, do otherwise. But really, I think I think the way the story is moving is eventually, maybe in the next few days, maybe after the Legislature Party meeting tomorrow, at some point Amit Shah will have to pick up the phone and speak to Uddhav Thackeray, and that's where I guess it'll get sorted out.
All right, so the Mahayudh in Maharashtra is one of the stories that we'll be covering on Brass Tacks tonight at 9:25. The other story is coming out of Kashmir, where 27 members of the European Parliament are currently there to try and gauge the ground situation. And the opposition is asking, what the hell? You didn't let us go there. You're asking 27 supposedly right-leaning MPs to come to the state and then gauge the situation.
Well, they are. Many of them are right-wing MEPs. I think about out of the 27, 22 of them are from right-wing parties in their respective countries. So you have members from the Brexit Party, you have members from Marine Le Pen's party in France, from a right-wing party in Poland. So, yes, they are right-wingers. I think the larger question that needs to be asked, you know, even if, let's say, some of these MEPs came from the Labour Party in England or from the Social Democrats in Germany. I think the larger question that the government of India needs to ask itself, and I think it's a valid question that the opposition is asking, you know, if we have to go, we have to ask for permission from the Supreme Court, but you are happy taking along these MEPs, what message does that send? Like I said yesterday, I think, you know, the perception around this story, certainly internationally, I'm talking about the international perception around the story, will only change the moment the restrictions are lifted. And by restrictions, I mean both the internet restrictions as well as the sort of political house arrest that the big name political leaders are under in Kashmir for the last 3 months. I think the sooner the government can move the needle in that direction, the perception will also change. But I think, I haven't heard a response from anybody in the BJP to what the opposition is saying, in as much as, you know, what's the answer to this? I mean, Rahul Gandhi and D. Raja and the others are asking what would seem on the face of it a legit question, that you have a problem with Indian opposition leaders going to Kashmir. Why wouldn't, you know, how is the situation suddenly so conducive for a bunch of European parliamentarians to go? I would also be interested to see, you know, what these folks say when they come back.
Yeah.
You know, what did they see? Who did they speak to? Was it a staged tour? I suspect many of them will be, you know, charitable to the government, if I can use that phrase. But I don't think they're just going to come out and parrot a line, or they're just going to, you know, mouth words that have been given to them.
There is a legitimate clampdown there in Kashmir. I mean, it's for everybody to see. There is no smokescreen to that.
Which is why I think I'd be very interested in seeing what these MEPs eventually say. I think they're back tomorrow, and maybe we'll try and get in touch with some of them. Obviously, they will speak to the media here in India as well, and try and get a sense of what they think is the situation. But like I said, I think it'll be more laudatory, but it won't be sort of, you know, parrots reading off lines. So I think that should be something interesting to watch out for.
All right. So the government has been fighting this perception battle over Kashmir for the last 3 months now. Another man who's been fighting a perception battle is MS Dhoni. Zaka, I woke up this morning and I saw Twitter, first thing I do. The top trend was hashtag Dhoni retires. You're a Dhoni fan.
Yep.
Did you choke up?
Big. I mean, I was trying to, find out where did this come from?
Nowhere.
I mean, you know, and that's what I found so curious and intriguing. You know, it's not like Dhoni has said anything. It's not like anybody else has said anything about Dhoni retiring. I mean, the last official comment we got was from MSK Prasad last week saying that we've moved on. So I was more intrigued by the fact that, you know, this has just come out of nowhere. I think... Now, obviously, Dhoni is hugely popular in this country. I'm willing to wager a bet that some fan started this off. Maybe somebody was trying to play a prank or something. But I think it's also an indication of what the country thinks of an icon like Dhoni. Now, there are two views to this. Look, in India, icons are treated very differently from, let's say, in Australia or in England. We've had the most famous example of Sachin Tendulkar, the greatest, you know, cricketing legend this country has produced, whose career was actually prolonged for his final test, for his 200th test match. So I think, you know, people need to take that into account. And I think that's what Sourav Ganguly meant by when he said, you know, as long as I'm around, everybody will be treated with respect. And Sourav himself is a classic example, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, he got dropped from the team, came back and did reasonably okay.
Yeah.
And then you become part of sort of folklore. I think Indian cricket owes that to Dhoni, if I can put it that way. He's arguably one of, not just arguably, I mean, he is one of the most successful captains we've produced. We won the One Day World Cup under him. We won the T20 World Cup under him. So I think he deserves to go out in style. There's no question about it. The problem,
on his terms, essentially.
Yeah, basically. On his terms. He can choose to go when he wants to go. The problem is, I think, twofold. One, his record leading up to, particularly in 2019, has been pretty bad, given his own, you know, very, very stratospheric kind of records that he's set in the past. And two, I think there is a problem between the thinking of the team management and his own place in the side. I think the team management feels that his time is over, which is fair enough. I mean, I don't think that's a, you know, unreasonable thing to think, especially if you were to go by his record strictly. But he, I think, wants to hang around till the T20 World Cup next year. I think it takes a conversation, and I don't think anybody wants to have that conversation. Clearly, I guess it has to happen with some kind of a mediatory presence, somebody who has the stature to sort of sit between the table, where you have Dhoni on the one side and maybe Virat Kohli and Ravi Shastri on the other. And I can't think of anybody more perfect than Sourav Ganguly to do that. But nobody's having that conversation. I think somebody needs to sit down and have that conversation and say, okay, this is what Dhoni has in his mind about his career. This is what the team management thinks. Can we find a middle ground? And I'm hoping that conversation happens sooner than later, because otherwise this is just turning out to be quite ridiculous. I mean, you have MSK Prasad saying one thing just the day after Ganguly said something else, and then now you have this, you know, Twitter trend from out of nowhere. So ultimately, I see this resulting in a happy ending. I mean, I don't think Dhoni's going to have a sour sort of farewell or a sour withdrawal from, or a sour retirement from cricket. He will have a fairy tale ending, as do all Indian sportsmen. It's just a question of when, where and how.
All right. So for this story and a lot more, tune in to Brass Tacks tonight at 9:25, only on CNN News 18.
No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.